Hello and welcome to Ex-Tumblr Girls, a podcast hosted by two ex-Tumblr girls turned modern Tumblr women who loved indie pop before it was cool. I'm your host, Tori.
I'm your host, Carly.
Let's talk about Tumblr. I have an exciting piece of analytic news.
What is it?
Our first episode has surpassed 100 listens.
Oh my God. That's so crazy.
I know.
100 people have listened to us. Probably more at this point. That's
yeah. Crazy. Between the two episodes, it's more, which is very exciting.
That's awesome.
So that's really thank awesome. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, we didn't know how long it would take us to actually have people listening, but we're very happy with how many people are tuning in.
Yeah,
still so, nervous, but
it's so exciting though to like be talking to y'all.
Okay, do you want to talk about vanilla extract now?
Yeah, okay. I know that's a jump for the listeners. But if any of you are active on Tumblr, which you know that Carly and I are, everything, fucking literally everything on my Tumblr dashboard says pure vanilla extract right now. And I need you to explain it right this instant.
I don't know where it originated from. And I don't know if it did originate from anywhere. I think this is really how Tumblr memes go recently. It's the same thing with Goncharov, where it just starts somewhere and then it becomes this big inside joke that only people on Tumblr understand. All yeah. I know is that vanilla extract started becoming like the joke option in polls. So every poll would have vanilla extract as an option and polls. People would just, yeah. And Tumblr has polls now.
Oh, great.
So it's like the joke option, so if vanilla extract is in a poll, everybody will select it because everybody loves vanilla extract, obviously. I mean, it is good,
right?
And it does make a cake a lot better. But yeah, there's no real origin, I don't think.
Yeah, I was on Tumblr and I clicked some like sign. It was a crab. I don't know what's going on that website these days, but it was like a merch shop and it had a water bottle that said pure vanilla extract, and I was like, what the fuck does this mean?
I really don't know, but I was searching through the vanilla extract tag on Tumblr to figure it out, and you know what, I was cracking up. It was really funny. I mean, I'm really on board with this meme.
You're right, this is just like Goncharov, which yeah. For those unfamiliar, which is probably everyone at this point, yeah. Goncharov is a movie that doesn't exist that everyone on Tumblr was blogging about like a month or two ago that had a complete yeah. plot and characters and ships and lore all based off of a fake pair of boots someone bought on eBay that says Goncharov, Broad Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. I really don't know why memes on Tumblr work like this. I guess it's because they want to keep the inside joke to themselves. That's my guess.
I do really love bizarre Tumblr memes. I think especially for the reason of you see it and at first you have no idea what's going on, and then you realize that everyone else reblogging it doesn't fully know what's going on, but you just hop yeah. on the joke.
Yeah.
And then it starts funny. Making sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summarization of that.
The meme you sent me today though, like I
that was funny.
I was cackling.
Because, we'll have to post it somewhere.
Yes, we will post it on the Instagram. Probably the story. But like, I was cackling because I was waiting for tonight for you to explain this meme to me. And all I saw was Dean Winchester's face with pure vanilla extract over it.
You couldn't expect anything less from Tumblr.
No, it was a perfect combination of memes.
Yeah, it was.
It really was. So let's talk other media that we're into this week, that we're watching, listening to.
Yeah. I finished You season one, finished rewatching it. And oh my God, it was so good. And I have so many thoughts, but I feel like I don't even want to start getting into it here because it's just a lot. I think this season really posed an interesting question about, like, what is the perfect victim? Which I think is a question that we've been asked a lot recently with all of the court cases. Amber Heard and Angelina Jolie, probably the most notable ones.
Yeah. And
I just really love Beck as a character. And you know what? Justice for Beck. Justice for Beck. I love her. And I think that it's a shame that so many people found her annoying back when the show first came out and didn't really like look deeper into it or try to think past like what Joe's perspective was telling us.
Yeah, I saw a really interesting post. I'm going to be honest, I don't remember what platform I saw it on, and I'm thinking it might have been Tumblr, like once I got back on last year. Someone was saying that a lot of viewers just hated her because she reminded them of themselves. And because she was just like a normal woman with some annoying qualities that got tricked by a horrible man. And because it like shows how easy it is to be that person.
Yeah. I feel so bad for that character. Started season two. And I'm sure I'll have thoughts at the end of that. And then I'm excited to get on with the newer seasons that I haven't seen yet. But there's so much to say, and we'll probably talk about it again next week once I'm more caught up.
Yeah, I just finished rewatching season three, and all I can say is the only thing I truly hate about season three is the last like 5 minutes of the episode, of the finale episode, that is.
That's rough.
I disagree with the ending, but we can talk about it once you get there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
This week I was watching the new season of a show I liked a couple years ago. If anyone else watches Outer Banks, it's a show that very much would have been popular for Tumblr users. You know, it's kind of like a West Side Story vibe, but it's just like five teenagers, you know, on a little bit of a mission. Like there's some drama, there's like class difference, it's got all of the makings of like a Teen Wolf type show. And the first two seasons I recall being really fun, like if a bit bizarre when I watched them a couple years ago. But season three came out this week, and oh my God, it was one of the worst pieces of TV I've ever seen in my life. I watched
it was
the
enjoyable
whole thing.
Though
Oh, yeah, I watched. No, it wasn't. I take that back. It was not. It was bad. I was laughing at how, like, bad the writing, even the camera work was bad. Like, and I watched the whole thing in a day because I had to. I just had to get it over with. But it literally felt like watching a Scooby-Doo movie. It was insanity. And they just announced season four.
It reminds me, even though I haven't seen it, you describing it reminds me of what happened with the last season of Teen Wolf and how much that hurt me.
Yes. Other things this week, I finally finished a book again, which I haven't done in like a couple of weeks. I just finished reading an autobiography, or like a memoir, I guess, called Everything I Know About Love by Dolly Alderton. It was one of those books that got suggested to me in a TikTok labeled something like books you should read in your 20s. And it was just like on my Goodreads shelf when I went to the library a couple weeks ago, and I kind of just picked it randomly, and I really, really enjoyed it. I like,
well,
it was a little
that's
bit
rare for
silly.
A TikTok book.
Yeah, it was a little bit silly. Like it had some pretty heartfelt chapters, and then there were like fake emails in between, and there were like recipes in it. And
that's
by
cute.
The end, I was like, oh, I actually feel really connected to this book. I feel like this was a really good representation of learning about relationships in your 20s. And like friendship was a really big center of the what I know about love part of it. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it sounds like a good book. I have my own opinions about TikTok, some TikTok books that I've happened upon.
Oh, I do too. However, I've been getting, I think, pretty good recommendations recently. I've been getting non-Colleen Hoover recommendations and more like dark literature. I've been getting, for some reason, a lot of cannibal literature. I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot. I know
the exact books you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't remember the title, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. There's a lot of them for some reason. Cannibalism is in, I guess.
Yeah. Cannibalism is in.
Tune in next week for The Last of Us.
I will be reading them. I'm going to give some of them a go. I'm like back on my going to the library grind. So as many of them as I can find, I will give a shot.
Love that for you.
But mention of The Last of Us, pretty good episode last night.
Yeah. Did you cry? I sure as hell did.
I did not. I don't know why.
I mean, I think that it wasn't geared to make you cry. I think I just cry every week because I have a problem, which we've covered that.
It's established. It's part of our lore.
Yeah. But next year there might be some cannibalism. Or next week. Next week there might be some cannibalism. We'll see. It is an apocalypse.
Yeah. I think I was just surprised that they took a break from the plot to do a whole backstory episode, because I'm feeling a little bit frantic about the current state of things.
That's fair. It was a DLC, like a completely separate part of the game that was added later. And it's a huge part of Ellie's story. I think that it'll pay off. I think it'll pay off next episode. I wanted to touch on the Hannah Baker content I've been seeing on Tumblr, which, you know, really should not surprise me in the least.
No.
Because I know for a fact that if that show had come out 3 years earlier, would have been what?
The book was popular.
You're right. But there wasn't a suicide scene in HT.
Yeah. I also, because the book was from Clay's perspective, I don't know that there was ever any graphic mention of how it happened.
The book was a lot more tasteful. And it's a book about suicide.
The book I actually enjoyed as like a young depressed teen, because I was like, I had always thought that the real like purpose of the book was to say like, oh, and in the end, you could literally have a full on description of why they did it and you would still not understand. You would still have unanswered questions and it would still have been something that hurts people. It would still have been like a tragedy, even if you completely understood why it happened. And then the show went and ruined that because they made it seem like it made sense.
Yeah, there was so many things wrong with the show and we really don't have the time.
No.
Maybe another time we could talk about how awful it was.
I would be willing to do a whole episode on why 13 Reasons Why sucks.
And then like the most recent seasons, they just keep ruining it. Like they just make it worse and worse. Crazy shit.
I was baffled when I heard that they made a season where the objective villain, who was like a bad person who did bad things to people, died, and everyone was like upset about it. And I was like, why?
Yeah, there was a lot wrong.
I was like, nobody needs this kind of nuance.
Yeah. So many problems.
So many problems. And that's what you get for taking something that was popular on Tumblr and turning it into a TV show.
Yeah, really. They messed with the wrong people. Mentally. They mentally messed with the wrong people.
But another new thing that came out this week that will kind of take us into the real topic of the episode is I was informed via TikTok that a Tumblr era pop singer is releasing new music, and that would be one Miss Melanie Martinez. has put out a 12-second snippet that just says back from the dead, and a video to match that says rest in peace, Crybaby. And wow. The word on the street is that Crybaby is dead and she is no longer the main character for the next album. Which, if you were on Tumblr in the era that we were on Tumblr, you will know that Crybaby was a huge thing. And I am really curious to see how much fandom she has maintained in the years since some other stuff has happened with her, like personal publicly.
I wonder if it'll be good.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, like, I don't know what the public perception of her is anymore. I think, like, it seems like people kind of just forgot about what happened. I don't know if this is going to be, like, are people going to continue, you know, the good fight of not separating the art from the artist? Like,
yeah,
it's really interesting to see how that plays out for women celebrities, I think.
Yeah, well, we know that Lana has maintained her fan base religiously.
We sure do, and we are going to get into that this week, because this week's topic, as you will have seen from the title, is pop queens of the 20-teens. Yes, we're talking the most iconic soundtracks of Tumblr. So the era that we're like talking about, one of the big kind of genre labels that gets attached to it is what in the mid early 2010s started getting called indie pop. So before then, there was mainstream pop music. There was indie music by independent artists, like more underground people. But then as I was looking into it, I was trying to just get, you know, maybe some sources on what music was like on the bigger scale at the time, because I was 13 and had a really small view of what was going on in the music world. And I was very interested to find that almost every article out there about 2010s, indie pop, even about music and its relationship to Tumblr, were all about men and men in bands. And there was a lot of mentions of Ezra Koenig working with Beyonce, which I didn't know, which is a thing. But like, it was all about like Vampire Weekend and Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros and Arctic Monkeys and the 1975, which, not to say that the 1975 was not like a defining thing on Tumblr, but our experience on Tumblr was very driven by women, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And the only women I saw mentioned in any of the articles I found were Sky Ferreira and Charlie XCX.
I find that so odd, because I was also only finding stuff about Charlie XCX, and I don't remember ever listening to her. Unless like, she was featured on a song with somebody else, like with Marina, she was.
I only knew her because she put out that song that was in the Fault in Our Stars movie. She made Boom Clap. Famously.
I'm so impressed that you remember that. We saw her in concert, didn't we?
Yeah, she opened for Halsey.
Yeah.
Crazy. But, like, not to say she's not good, because she makes... I like her music a lot now, but on Tumblr, she was, like, not that big of a deal.
No.
And I don't remember her being that big of a deal in mainstream pop either.
No, I mean, she opened for Halsey.
Like...
she wasn't the headliner.
Right. And so I did find it interesting that these articles were really... talking about like what Charlie XCX did for pop, and I was like, I feel like her pop influence has come later as she's moved into hyper pop, has been really cool. Mm-hmm. But the women of 2010s indie pop were a big bunch that we want to give spotlight to.
Yeah, I think that on my blog, like, I was looking through my archive earlier today, and there were no men. There were Teen Wolf men, but there were no male celebrities, because I didn't care. Like, I had enough content with Marina, with Lana, Melanie, and all the other artists that I listened to. And I may have reblogged, like, lyric posts for the Arctic Monkeys, but I didn't really care about the actual men. I just cared about their music.
Yeah, like I wasn't actively blogging like pictures of Maddie Healy, even if I was reblogging like
there were blogs doing that though.
There were. And
there were plenty.
Those blogs were also Halsey blogs a lot of the time.
That's true.
Which, because I will get into this overlap later in the episode.
I know you will.
But to give like a sense of the kind of big group of women in indie pop at the time, just want to kind of like list off who were the voices of the Tumblr audio posts, as it were. So we had, of course, the like the main icons. We had Lorde and Halsey and Lana and Marina and Melanie. And then we had Florence from Florence and the Machine. We had FKA Twigs, Sky Ferreira, Grimes, which I totally forgot that Grimes was like a Tumblr girl before she was with Elon.
Whatever she is now. Before like, she's on her way to Mars.
Now.
I don't know.
Then there was also, do you remember the Haim sisters?
Yeah.
Yes.
I do. It was Haim. I loved them.
The XX, I don't know if that whole band was women, but the singer, it was fronted by a woman. So the sound was sonically feminine.
Yes.
And then I listed Charlie XCX just for the hell of it, because apparently she was a really big deal to everyone else.
And music on Tumblr was a lot of times through audio posts, like you said, but there were also lyric posts that were usually on a gridded background or a floral painting, something very generic. The font usually very generic. Helvetica New Italic Bold, right? Is that the one that you said?
That's the one.
There are a lot of mood boards as well. 8-Tracks playlist, which was the pre-Spotify struggle platform.
8-Tracks was honestly like really good.
I've gone onto the 8-Tracks website every now and then, and there's still some good playlists you can find on there.
What I liked about 8-Tracks was that like it was just kind of, it was a mini playlist, you know? It would like perfectly capture a really specific vibe in 8 songs that were super Tumblr famous, you know? Like you would have one from each of these women on a playlist that encapsulated some like hyper specific teen angst vibe.
Mm-hmm.
That also.
Yeah, I wrote down a few of the lyrics that I felt like I saw the most from the artist I'll talk about. I also feel like Tumblr was a very visual social media, so it was less about the lyrics and more about the musician themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, in order for a musician to do well on Tumblr, they needed to have a really strong aesthetic. And I feel like all of the ones that we're talking about today have a whole vibe that is instantly recognizable if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think even if like not them, like their visual look specifically, like their lyrics had to have really strong visuals in them.
Mm-hmm.
Something like so it true. Had to be fan artable.
Yes, so true. I have something to say about that for my next artist,
okay.
Or the first artist we will be going over. Do you want to start?
Yeah, let's get into it. We're going to go in sort of chronological-ish order, somewhat of the order the albums came out. We're going to be focusing on like the most iconic Tumblr era album from each of these artists. So sort of in the order they came out, also sort of the order in which they became popular on Tumblr. So
okay.
Carly, kick us off. Who are we talking about first?
We're going to be talking about Florence Welch from Florence and the Machines. She was one of my favorite musicians on Tumblr, and I still listen to her now. She actually has really good music out now, so you should definitely go listen to her latest album.
Yeah, I haven't
listened
to her recently.
It was called. I think it's called Dance Craze or something like that. Don't quote me on that. It was really hard for me to pick between Lungs and Ceremonials because they're both have really good songs on them. But I decided to go with Lungs, which was her debut album. It came out in 2009, so we were not on Tumblr yet. At least I really hope I wasn't. That was probably around the time that we met. No, a little bit earlier than when we met. I don't know much about her personally. I do know she believes in werewolves, and she collects Scottish broadswords.
Wait. I just processed the second thing you said. How do you know she believes in werewolves?
She said it in an interview that she believes in werewolves. This was back in like 2012, so maybe her stance on werewolves has changed. Couldn't tell you.
Oh god, that's so funny. Okay, that's an iconic thing to say when you're like a Tumblr icon is I believe in werewolves.
So true. Yeah, and she collects Scottish broadswords.
Also icon behavior.
Sure. I mean, if you have the money for it, you should be collecting Scottish broadswords. This album in particular is one of her more chaotic and bold albums compared to the stuff that came out later. It was actually a breakup album. She ended up getting back together with the guy. Don't know if they're still together, but it was a breakup album and then no longer a breakup album. But it does explain a lot of the heavy emotion and bleakness to some of the songs, which I think are still present in her later music, but they're different now. My fave song is probably Rabbit Heart. I have the chorus, which is, "This is the gift. It comes with a price. Who is the lamb and who is the knife? Midas is king and he holds me so tight. He turns me to gold in the sunlight." What a chorus. Wow. She does a lot of references to mythology, literature, history, and religion. She is very well read, even though she was an art student. So, you know, shout out to art students everywhere. We're smart. Her lyrics on Tumblr were usually paired with like classical art, specifically religious imagery a lot of the time.
This is what I remember about her music, because I don't actually know that I've ever listened to this album like once all the way through, but the visual of her with like the lungs, is this that album? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. That imagery is what I really remember from like her presence on Tumblr.
Yeah. Her lyrics are so beautiful. And some of her earlier music, like I'm pretty sure her latest album is about some like dance plague. So she really likes to pull from history. I don't know. I didn't get that much into it because I am focusing on her debut album, but definitely look into it because she is doing some iconic things right now. Another iconic thing that she did on her first album was she played all of the instruments in The Dog Days Are Over, and she is not a talented musician. She said that she really didn't know what she was doing. She didn't know how to play guitar. A quote from Interview Magazine, she said of using outside musicians, "It never fit, so I started playing piano by myself, doing the drums by myself, and it was all very visceral because there was a lot of enthusiasm involved, but no skill." And I think that is so cool, and it was something I didn't really know. I just assumed that she was like a multi-talented goddess that could just create these iconic anthems, and that was it.
That's really crazy. That's a big song, like production-wise, I remember it. It's like a really intense song.
Yeah, a lot of her music, especially in the first album, had like a 7-item or a 7-person band. Usually it was choirs, there was harps, there was strings. She really liked to do the most, especially in her first album. She refers to her music as big tribal goth pop. Don't really know what that means. I love the name. But her music is also described as baroque pop, which I've never heard before, but also very on brand for her.
I would like more baroque pop.
Yeah. Where are the baroque pop artists now? I want more. Maybe if like Hozier's newest album will be a little baroque pop. Who knows? He's been doing some. What's that song he put out, Bones, that was very poppy, and everybody was like, he just agreed to do this because Bones was the title of the song. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. You'll have to listen after the episode. Yeah, she actually has quite a big following on Tumblr now. When I was looking into her on Tumblr, it was hard to find anything that was old because she has a lot of blogs dedicated to her. I still see stuff on my dashboard all the time. And so she's kind of a constant on my blog now. It's mostly concert pics, and her concerts look to be like completely magical. Like, she really captivates just the photo. I can't even imagine what it's like to see her live. Also, a lot of fan art of her with swords. Pretty much all of them are her with a sword, which, you know, she collects the swords.
Now that I think about it, I feel like her lyrics got used a lot for the Raven Cycle mood boards and fan art because they shared similar, like, mythology themes.
Yeah. And just the visual aesthetic that came with a lot of her lyrics. I feel like Maggie Stiefvater and her very similar writing. You know, different mediums, but I could say that they were pretty similar writers.
Broke pop.
And that is all I have for Florence.
I will move on to our second artist, who, I'm not gonna lie, this might be a bold claim, but I don't really know that it's that unwarranted. I think might be like the biggest Tumblr defining artist of women in indie pop. And that's Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. I think she's earned that title.
And I will say, before I like get into her Tumblr era discography, while I was like listening to her music over the past couple days, like, she has so much music in her discography. She has what, like 8 albums now?
Yeah. If not 9. She's just constantly putting stuff out.
I'm going to be focusing on Born to Die, which is technically her first album, because I read that she put out another album before that, but under like a different stage name. So this was her first album as Lana, and its cultural impact specifically on Tumblr was like absolutely insane. One article I was reading about her said that this album spent 400 weeks on the Billboard Top 200 album chart, which, if my math is correct, is 8 years.
That's so many weeks.
That's like, I think probably the biggest stat I found out of all of the artists I was researching. So let's get into like what Born to Die is and why Tumblr latched onto it. So the first song from the album that like really took off was not the hit single Summertime Sadness, but actually it was Video Games. So I was reading that Video Games took off first, and Lana said to Variety, "I remember being in Long Island with my family and seeing The Weeknd post Video Games on Tumblr." And I just thought that was I thought that was insane that that's how she knew she'd taken off. Back in like 2011 or whatever. Like, that's...
The Weeknd was on Tumblr?
I know.
And that's news to me.
So what people said after this was that like Lana was doing something really new for pop at the time. So at the time that Video Games and Born to Die came out, the like number one song of the time was like Roar by Katy Perry. And Miley Cyrus was having her big moment. And Lana came in and essentially like disrupted that sound a little bit with the style of her narrative. And so Lana goes on to say, "I can't say to what extent I've influenced anything, but I can say all of my creative cosplay, aka notes from my real life, did widen up the sound in popular music for people to make a departure from a pure pop sound to something more diarist," which is like more kind of self-reflective, as if you were writing in a diary. So some of the like themes of the album, it's very like Americana. It's very 1920s Hollywood, and at the same time like 1950s New York and LA, and it's kind of just an amalgamation of like the most iconic chic American images you can think of. I mean, on Tumblr, a photo of her that was like especially popular was that one of her with the American flag in the background and the bright red lipstick and the bikini.
Yes. Very pinup doll.
Yes, very. And So some of the like real the real capturing lyrics of the album. In the second song off the album, Off to the Races, the first lyric is, "My old man is a bad man." And so right off the bat, we're talking about like being in love with an older man who's maybe got some risky financial and business investments. There's very much tones of being a sugar baby.
That was the dream when we were 13.
Yes.
Very realistic and very healthy.
Following My Old Man is a Bad Man, she has some other lyrics in between, but then she says, "He loves me with every beat of his cocaine heart."
Not the cocaine heart.
Yes, every beat of it. And like,
it's not subtle.
I get at the time, this was like pure artistry, but when you hear it now, it sounds satirical.
I know. It reminds me of cocaine side boob. Lana Del Rey walked so Harry Styles could run.
Yes. Some other lyrics. Some other lyrics include, "Baby, put on heart-shaped sunglasses because we're going to take a ride. Says he's going to show me just what fast is." Oh, that is from the song Diet Mountain Dew, the chorus of which is, "Diet Mountain Dew, baby, New York City." Which it's like, just think of every classic American image you can and just state them in order.
Oh, man.
We've also got the song actually titled National Anthem.
That was a good one.
With lyrics, "Money is the anthem of success, so before we go out, what's your address?" And then later, we've got the chorus, which is, "Red, white, blue in the sky, summer's in the air, and baby, heaven's in your eyes. I'm your national anthem." And my favorite lyric of this song is like pre-chorus. There's just one part where she goes, "Do you think you'll buy me lots of diamonds?"
Man. And you got to talk about the music video. So it wasn't, she wasn't singing the national anthem, but she sang a rendition of "Happy Birthday, Mr. President," a la Marilyn Monroe in the 60s, I guess.
That's so, so on brand.
It really is.
Another classic lyric going back to "Off to the Races." Again, like listing the most American images you can. She says, "I'm your little starlet, scarlet, queen of Coney Island."
Coney Island, what a choice.
Romanticize the shit out of it, babe. And then the last one I'll mention is "Dark Paradise," which this lyric is going to go into like what I really find impactful about her album. She says, "Your soul is haunting me and telling me that everything is fine, but I wish I was dead."
Wow.
And very Tumblr. Something, exactly. So while a lot of the imagery is about like the Chateau Marmont and cocaine and for some reason beer, because that's American, and New York City. And then she even has a song called "Lolita," which invokes Lolita references about older men and younger women. And it takes all of it kind of out of the old cultural context for it and brings it into a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of curious about how, like, I was like, okay, I know all of this was the popular imagery on Tumblr, but also now, reflectively, years later, I feel like this imagery all had a little bit of like a second meaning to it that maybe mm-hmm. we didn't recognize at the time. And I found this article on Jezebel that was all about how Lana Del Rey Tumblr was really kind of the, like, if you looked at a Venn diagram of girls who were sad and looking for a way to get through it and Lana Del Rey stands, it was like basically a fucking circle. Like, mm-hmm. because young girls who were struggling really looked to this lyric, to this lyricism of all these bad things feeling beautiful and feeling glamorous and, like, you know, romanticizing your life. It, Lana kind of like started that trend, essentially. It's like a huge thing on TikTok now, like, romanticize my life. But, like, that's what she was doing. And whether it was her intention or not, then came a lot of images of, trigger warning, self-harm, thin posting, eating disorder posting, talking about, like, really rough traumas and pairing them with, like, these beautiful images and these really stylized lyrics. And this article from Jezebel says, Born to Die was largely panned by critics who wrote that she was dangerous, that she glamorized terrible men and codependent relationships. Lana romanticized pain, and most people took that as a moral failing. But when your situation was one of unrelenting, inarticulate, unyielding, incomprehensible, inescapable sadness, how else were you to bear it than to glamorize it? And wow, that is, like, what happened on Tumblr in a freaking nutshell.
Yeah. I think I'll touch on this too, like, when I talk about Marina, because the same thing really happened with her albums and her songs. They were all really depressing. Pretty much all of the people that we talk about had really depressing songs.
Yeah. And I think what was, like, unique about Lana was, like, for, to me now, is that, like, this was all kind of aestheticized as, like, Hollywood starlet Lolita behavior, except I don't feel that there was any of the then removed reflection and nuance to be like, but this isn't how it really is. None of these things actually are beautiful. Like, glamorizing it can't make it better. It was kind of just like, it was presented as the glamorous image. And then famously a few years ago, she put out that question for the culture on Instagram saying that, like, now that all these other women have had their turn to talk about sex and be explicit, can I go back to talking about abuse in a romantic and glamorous way? And I think that for me was, like, a real wake up. I was like, oh, this wasn't, like, a one-time album aesthetic. This wasn't even just, like, a lyrical choice. It, like, maybe really is how you view it, is that, like, it is a thing to talk about glamorously as if that's the only way.
Yeah, you can't really expect 14-year-olds on Tumblr to be able to reflect on the lyrics and draw their own conclusions from it when the artist isn't even doing that.
Yeah, so I know that that'll be a controversial take, is that Lana's question for the culture actually was kind of problematic, because her stans go hard, and I get it. I do, because she was, like, pivotal for people who discovered her during Tumblr eras. Like, after Born to Die, she released Paradise EP, Ultraviolence, and Honeymoon, all before 2015. Yeah. Like, she was putting out album after freaking album, and everyone on Tumblr was latching on to it.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to separate the art from the artist now when they're just intertwined, and especially when you're on Tumblr and it's just as important to know the artist behind the lyrics. Like, that was really important for me and the artist that I listened to. And Lana was kind of secretive. She didn't, I mean, as far as I know, she didn't really post a lot about her life. I don't think, she didn't have a Tumblr, did she? Or at least not one that was...
Not as far as I could find, but I think she's a little bit more public now. Like I said, her fans are really diehard, so I'm not going to voice too strong of a negative opinion toward her. Because, like, some people I have seen recently saying that, like, she invented modern pop. And, like, I do get where that would come from, in that, like, you know, the popularity of video games and Born to Die and Summertime Sadness, like, you know, coming in with kind of a new sound for pop in the early 2010s. I would not go so far as to say that she created modern pop, because I think all the other women we're talking about were also doing really interesting things in the same time frame and doing it in unique ways, and not only because of her. She wasn't, like, the only person who opened up this space. And so I think it's a little little bold to say she invented modern pop, or that she's like the reason that we have pop female artists as we do today.
I don't think you can attribute that to anybody in particular.
Yeah. That's just some takes I've seen online recently, especially because she's putting out a new album, which I did listen to the new single for. It's called American Whore.
On brand.
You cannot make this shit up, dude.
She is nothing if not predictable.
Yeah. Well, I'll close this off by saying that Paradise, her EP, was nominated for a Grammy. And in 2015, she did win the Billboard Trailblazer Award for Women in Music, which I think at the time, perfectly fair. And I think one of her more recent albums was also nominated for a Grammy. And so, like, obviously the woman has talent. I will say Norman fucking Rockwell, her best album.
I love that album.
She said in an interview I was reading that she thinks it's her best album. I don't know if that counts the current one coming out, but Norman fucking Rockwell was like between Born to Die and Paradise and Norman fucking Rockwell in the middle, everything to me might as well be flop era, because Norman fucking Rockwell is the best album she's ever made. And despite my thoughts about her and separating the art from the artist, I still like that album.
Yeah, I still really like her music. I just, I'm not a stan. Like, I'm a stan for some of the other artists.
Yeah, so let's get into women we stan.
Yeah, so.
And then one more that we don't.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about Marina Diamandis, aka Marina and the Diamonds, but now she just goes by Marina.
Iconic. One name.
She was hands down my favorite artist in my Tumblr years. And still, I could say that she's my favorite artist. She's the one that stuck with me throughout everything. I can always count on her music. So the Diamonds were actually her fans, not her band. I don't think a lot of people know
that. I did not know that.
Yeah, so there is that, just to clear that up, even though now she just goes by Marina, probably because people were mistaking that all the time. So she created the name Marina and the Diamonds in 2005, and started uploading her music to MySpace first in 2006.
She was a MySpace queen.
Yes, she was. And so it's no wonder that she became popular on Tumblr. 2007 is when she started producing her own music. And yeah, so through MySpace is how she promoted her first EP, which was called Mermaid Versus Sailor, which is, I couldn't find anything about it. It was apparently only released on CDs and people could buy it through her MySpace, but I don't think there's any digital record. So if anybody has one of probably 500 copies of her first EP, I will send you all the money I have. I will sell my house. I will do anything.
My jaw is like literally on the floor right now about this. Like, I'm going to be scouring eBay for the rest of forever.
Yeah. So that's crazy. And I'm a huge fan and I did not know about it. And then she also used MySpace to promote her first album, Family Jewels, which I love, but is not the one I'm going to be talking about today. I'm going to be talking about Electra Heart, which is probably her more iconic album, especially on Tumblr.
Yes.
So after MySpace, she briefly moved to her official website to blog, but it wasn't until 2011 that she moved to Tumblr. Starting in 2011 through 2013, Marina was promoting this album and multimedia project called The Archetypes. But the URL was electraheart.tumblr.com. And so the four archetypes that she has on her blog, as she tagged them, like traditional Tumblr style, was Suburbia, which is a housewife, suburban housewife, which I love. I love that. Homewrecker, which is one of the names on her album, Teen Idol, and Prima Donna, which are both songs on her album, which I'll talk about.
I knew about the archetype thing. I have never heard Suburbia.
There's actually a YouTube video called Suburbia, which I'll get into it. So each archetype kind of had a completely different look. And they're almost like different personas of this character, Electra Heart. But Electra Heart was one character. And I think that's something that's not super clear at first. But if you scour through her tags, you can see there's a specific quality to each of the archetypes. Electra Heart was originally supposed to be an album under an alias, but her record label talked her out of that. So it was under the same name as the Family Jewels, which was Marina and the Diamonds. The song and music video Fear and Loathing marked the birth of the Electra Heart character, which was on August 8th, 2011. And so that was posted on YouTube first and then on Tumblr. And it was Electra Heart Part 1, Fear and Loathing. And then she continued to release these iconic music videos in 11 parts on YouTube. And some of these were not even songs on her album. They were ones that were later added to the Platinum Blonde Edition, mm-hmm. which came out last year. And Suburbia is one of them. But it's more of a, it's not really a song. It's kind of this like creepy black and white film video that's like flickering. Ooh. And it's very haunting. You gotta just watch through all of them. I wasn't on Tumblr at the time, so I was not following this, but yeah. Looking back into it, I remember these specific videos and the imagery that was associated with each of them. It was just kind of beautiful to watch it all from start to finish. And to know that there were fans out there that were like hanging on to every piece of content she was putting out. I just can't imagine what that was like.
I am so jealous. But I will say, I feel like I got that experience with another artist I'll talk about later.
Yeah, so true.
But I remember the screen caps of these like iconic music videos.
Yeah, they were often made into GIF sets.
Yes.
And I
color graded that heavily.
Oh yes. My personal favorite song on this album and the music video that goes with it, and it's the one that introduced me to Marina, was How to Be a Heartbreaker. If you're not familiar with, I'm pretty sure this song kind of went viral on TikTok, maybe, or maybe it was Bubblegum Bitch. Was it Bubblegum Bitch?
Yeah, Bubblegum Bitch did.
Okay.
Another fantastic song.
So true. So, How to Be a Heartbreaker, I think it was number 8, but not sure. If you're not familiar with the music video, she's basically in a locker room shower with a bunch of shirtless guys around her. It was watching that as a young girl. I was like, queen. I could recognize a queen when I saw her. And
we were like, this is feminism, is when women objectify men. This was feminism
to me. We talked about our first, exactly. We talked about on our first episode, like that Tumblr introduced us to feminism. Well, Marina introduced me to feminism first, I will say, through How to Be a Heartbreaker. And then I continued to learn from her as I went through my Tumblr years. Another favorite song from the album is Teen Idol. Marina talks a lot in interviews about her complicated feelings towards her adolescence, how she never really felt like she fit in. There's a line from the song that is, wish I wasn't such a narcissist, wish I didn't really kiss the mirror when I'm on my own. Oh God, I'm gonna die alone. So super fucking depressing. And this song is, I think this song is the saddest one on this album.
That's fair to say.
And it also ties into the one archetype, the teen idol. Mm-hmm. But to talk about the Electra Heart character as a whole, this character that Marina crafted, she was self-destructive, she was selfish, she was impulsive. And all of these toxic, quote-unquote toxic traits were a huge part of the aesthetic and why it was so well-liked on Tumblr. The album and the character were really, it was commentary, and I'm pretty sure at the time I knew that. It was commentary on sex, on love, on insecurity, the objectification of women, purity culture, a ton of other themes. But I think probably in true Tumblr fashion, probably a lot of the subtlety and satirical nature was lost on the Tumblr tweens.
It was very misinterpreted just into an aesthetic.
Yeah. And her character was, you know, it was glamorized and it was turned into an aesthetic when she was really critiquing a lot of these archetypes that she was using to create the Electra Heart character. And even going back now, it's like people creating suburbia aesthetic mood boards. And I'm like, okay, but why are we liking this? You know, maybe we should be thinking about it. But, you know, I think that begs the question, like, why did these young girls find power in these archetypes that Marina created when really they represent women who aren't or powerless in like the real world?
I feel like it's, for me at least, I feel like one of the qualities of it was that she was spinning them all like on their head a little bit, you know, she was kind of flipping them upside down. So, you know, there was Electra Heart, the housewife and the teen idol. And then there was How to Be a Heartbreaker, which is always leave a man first, do what he's going to do and do it worse because you can't get hurt if you're the one who's hurting.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, there's some truth to that, as like the same thing you said with Lana's, like, how else are we supposed to bear it instead of glamorizing it?
And I think for young teen girls, especially, it's like, this is the first time you're hearing, I mean, back in 2013, at least, this is like kind of the first time you're hearing a pop song about like being angry about the way men treat you and doing it like literally the name Bubblegum Bitch of like, I'm going to be everything you want me to be. I'm going to be this like iconic woman and you can't have it.
Yeah. She was, all of her songs, like I was looking through, I was reading lyrics of all of them and they were all really so well angry, angry, sad. They really represented such a wide spectrum of emotion that Marina says this album is about love. And but she says it's about like the consequences of love and rejection is the other side of love. And I think that's kind of where the anger comes from. So the idea of the Electra Heart character and these four archetypes actually came from Tumblr. That's what directly inspired it. And also time. Yeah, I know, right? But it also came from her time touring in America for the Family Jewels. This quote from the Irish Times was, I was starting to think about our Tumblr generation and how photos appear on Tumblr and people become almost like mini stars of the internet. And you don't know who the hell they are. They're just anonymous faces. So I started to take photos and make an effort to look completely different in each one, in different hotels and apartments all across America when I was traveling. And it just started to build from that. So that's awesome. And if you are to look on her Tumblr blog now, you'll see a lot of stuff from the music videos, but there's also a lot of just typical Tumblr posts that really show she was a Tumblr girl at heart. And
she was just really one of us.
Shows she really was. And there were a lot of webcam selfies that still get turned. I mean, I'm sure you've seen them.
Yes.
Yeah, they're iconic. But really, like, looking through, it's obvious that it's not like an official musician's Tumblr account that they use for promotional things. This was her blog. She actually is still blogging. The last time she made a post was January of this year. I'll go into that, but to go back to Electra Heart, the era officially ended 2 years after she published the first music video, which is, you know, very on brand of creating this album birthday, which I know some people think is weird. I love it. I'm on board. She posted the music video Electra Heart, which wasn't originally on the album and was later added to a deluxe album. And that marked the end of the character. The character is dead. There was a popular edit going around of it photoshopped onto an old newspaper. It was very Tumblr. If you know, you know.
I know. Until we talked about it, I actually thought that was the official announcement because I remember you sending it to me on Tumblr and it was like a newspaper that said like Electra Heart found dead. It was like, it was really iconic.
Yeah. It was, I think as a whole, this album was proudly feminist, also profoundly sad, which is why I related to it as a 14-year-old girl who thought I was evil and deeply disturbed for some random reason.
Yeah, we contained multitudes, but we thought one of those multitudes was like a terrible man-eater.
Yeah. I was literally 14, never kissed a boy before, but I digress. Now, Marina has admitted that the album doesn't really fit well within her discography. She likens it to creating and acting in a play. And I think this is mainly because it was a character. She hadn't really done a concept album like this since then. One thing that she still does is she still goes on Tumblr. She created a Tumblr blog called Planet Fruit to promote that album.
Yes.
And then which I love that album. It was really hard to not look into it for this podcast episode.
I had the supreme privilege of seeing Fruit on tour.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous.
She did the night in three acts. She did Family Jewels, Electra Heart, and Fruit. And she had a different outfit for each of them. It was so amazing. That was one of the best concerts of my life.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous. In 2017, she started a third blog called Marina Book, and this is the one she uses now. She started this blog with the purpose of sharing podcasts, books, self-written letters, and poetry, and this was as she took a break from music, even though I think she just put out an album. The last time she posted was this January, a few weeks ago, and it's a poem called Eat the World, and it's in this really pretty, like, graphic. It's not just a regular text post. You should definitely go check it out because I was so happy to see it being posted so recently. It's a good sign.
She's just like us.
She really
is. Marina, if you are listening, if Marina would like to be on the X Tumblr Girls podcast,
fingers fucking crossed.
Hit us up. Okay.
We might as well say it.
This is why everyone needs to follow us on Tumblr. So that we can get reblogged and catch the attention of Marina Diamandis.
Yes. That's all I have for Marina, my favorite artist from my Tumblr years. I loved to read about Electra Heart, but also love her new music. And I'm so proud that she is also a Tumblr girl.
So I'm sure you've noticed by now this episode has gone a little bit longer than we usually do, and we are planning to talk about three more queens. We didn't say at the beginning how many. We've only gotten through Florence, Lana, and Marina, but ahead we have a few more of our favorite icons that came a couple years later in the Tumblr lexicon. So we are actually going to turn this into a two-part feature. So you will be able to come back next week and hear more about the pop queens of the 20-teens so that they can all get their appropriate spotlight. We can talk about their awesome story albums and their impact. And in the meantime, Carly, where can they find us?
You can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is at xtumblrgirlspod. Our TikTok is at xtumblrgirls. And we, of course, have a Tumblr. You can find us there at xpodcastgirls.tumblr.com. Come join, be our bestie, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.